Hey, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Broke Down Podcast. This is episode 24. My name is Jonathan. I'm glad to have you with me. We've got a lot ahead of us in this episode, so we're going to kind of cut right to it. First of all, I want to tell you, of course, that Broke Down Podcast is part of the Osiris Podcast Network. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with podcasts, live experiences, artists, and topics you love. We're going to be doing a bunch of live events this summer around the country, including artist interviews, contests, and more. And you can sign up for the newsletter at osirispod.com to stay in the loop. Relix Magazine is a media partner of Osiris, too. So for music news, you should go to relix.com. But you deadhead types, you already know that, don't you? So we got a couple guests in this episode. First up, I had the privilege of talking to Grateful Dead keyboardist Tom Constantin. Yeah, so these days Tom is playing with a group called Live Dead 69, and they are embarking on a little East Coast run for the upcoming Days Between. The band features Mark Caron on guitar. You know him from Rat Dog or The Other Ones. Of course, Tom Constantin, Slick Aguilar, played with Dave Crosby, was a longtime Jefferson Starship cat. And Robin Sylvester, you know him from Rat Dog. And on this tour, they're going by Live Dead and Riders 69. So they're going to reach forward into 1970 when the Dead were doing the evening with the Grateful Dead. You know, shows like Harper College would be a good example of that, Stony Brook and what have you. Those concerts included the new Riders. And so these shows will open with the band performing as new Riders. And they have added Michael Falzarano, member of the Riders for past while. And you may also remember him from Hot Tuna before that. Yeah, so that's Live Dead and Riders 69. They're coming out east for these shows. They're going to be on August 1st, Jerry's birthday, at the Foundry at the Fillmore in Philadelphia. August 2nd at the Hamilton in Washington, D.C. I'll be at that one, so come say hi. Maybe I'll have some stickers. Then August 3rd at the 13th Annual Bears Picnic Family Reunion in Blaine, Pennsylvania. August 4th, they'll be at the Starland Ballroom in Sayreville, New Jersey. And August 5th, they'll be at The Space at Westbury in Westbury, New York. Tom and I, we talked by phone last week. He was just as kind as he was the first time I met him 25 years ago. We get into that and a whole bunch more. And I'm going to go ahead and play you that conversation right now and be back in just a little bit.
Are you still there?
I'm here.
I apologize. My headset cut out on me there, but I think I heard you say you're still there.
It's an unproblem. I hope we have several more.
Yeah, well, these are the best kinds of disasters, right?
Well, I appreciate the. I've been on the road long enough to appreciate when things go right.
Yeah, I raising children does the same thing for a fella, I think.
Oh, yes, failure is not an option. You've
exactly.
Got to cut through. Yeah.
Just different kinds of success.
Oh, but the rewards. Oh, yes.
Indeed. So I want to start by thanking you for talking with me today. I've certainly been a fan of your work for longer than I should get into. I want to disclose at the beginning here that I met you in 1993 when you played
okay.
with the Dead Ringers in Washington, D.C.
Okay. Georgetown?
Yes, sir.
That place up Wisconsin Avenue.
Yeah, I think it was called the Grog and Tankard.
That's exactly right. I remember it well. I remember a Thai restaurant adjacent we went to.
Yep.
Yes.
And I could say you were very kind to a young and eager Deadhead. And I honestly don't remember a bit of the substance of our conversation, but I remember that it was a nice chat, and you were very nice to me.
Well,
and I've since echoed
maybe
that
there wasn't
phone.
Any.
It perhaps
talk,
wasn't.
You know?
Yeah, it might well have been because I'm certain that I was probably a little bit like, should I go talk to him? I'm going to do it, you know, kind of thing. I was young and excited.
We are all there and treasure it. There are the great memories.
Indeed, and that was a fun show.
Oh, we were better than we deserved to be. Actually, we had great people. We had David Nelson. We had Barry Sless. Matt Kelly was with us for a while.
It was a stacked little lineup. I think that the name was good. A bunch of ringers, indeed.
Yes, my motto was, we look just like us.
This group you're with now, the Live Dead 69, was, I guess it was formed to focus specifically on the album Live Dead, but now the tour has been kind of recast. You're coming out as Live Dead and Rider 69. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about what's different this tour?
Well, the thing is, we discovered that we can't just go recreating the same album. We didn't learn it from listening to it off the album. We learned it closer to the source, and so that we should go back to that and deliver the stuff that we remember. In a way, we are the opposite of a tribute band. None of us feels we have to prove that he's somebody else. We are ourselves, and we deliver what we remember, and that's the difference.
So as I understand it, you've brought in Michael Ferrazzano. I think I pronounced his name wrong. It's who has played with Hot Tuna and New Writers to do some New Writers music at the top of the show?
Oh, yes. And he brings not just authenticity, but he knows how the songs go in detail, having worked with Yorma and Marmaduke and Buddy Cage. And he's really close to the source, and he shows it, and we are the beneficiaries.
Well, that's great. And with the Dead material, it doesn't get much closer to the source than yourself when we're looking at that time frame of the late 60s, early 70s.
I'm a bit too close, actually.
Perhaps. You've removed yourself over the years and gone down quite a few different roads, though. And one of the things I was wondering, you know, I think it's commonly known among Dead fans that your, you know, when you met Phil was bonded was over your shared affinity for avant-garde composers and whatnot. But you've also done work since those days. You've worked with Yorma, and you've made a record or contributed to a record with Robin Petrie, Dulcimer player, and done classical
Grace
work.
Fowler.
And so you're kind of all over. You're not just in that that corner. And I'm not sure where the question is. I guess the question is ultimately, where is your heart now? Is it spread out all over the map, or is it in one of those corners?
My travels take me all over the map. But when I visit some place, I'm there. I'm currently working with a string quartet, and we do arrangements I've made of tunes like Eleanor Rigby, As Tears Go By, Marrakesh Express. I also have an improvisatory duo with Bob Breloff called Dos Hermanos. That's Dose, D-O-S-E, as in measurement of medication, not the number two.
Right.
And we have a new album in the can that we're ready to move with, so we'll see what happens with that. Live Dead 69 is exciting for me because it's the old material, the old briar patch I grew up in that I feel so easy and comfortable with, conversing with two avatars of the guitar. Mark Caron and Slick Aguilar are both superpowers. When we get out there, it is like the best kind of therapy for me. I mean, I feel elevated. As a test you might know about for musicians, how long the set seems. And if you're not having a good time, an hour and a half set seems like 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
Well, these guys, we're often longer than that, and I think what happened to the time? It just dissolves away. It's like butter.
Well, time is an illusion. It's nice to be able to tear down that curtain sometimes, right?
Yes, well, as I heard it said that it exists to keep everything from happening at once.
So you also worked with Jazz is Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you've kind of already answered the question I had formulated when I wanted to talk about Jazz is Dead. They're a kind of a wild reinterpreting of Grateful Dead music.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other groups that are very much the faithful recreation. And it sounds like this group leans towards you're rooted in the faithful, but you're open-ended in your direction. Is that?
At any given night, anything can happen. That's for sure. Just as back in 1969 when I was playing with that other band.
Excellent. Yeah, that other band was, they were pretty good then.
We were on the odds of something and we knew it, yes.
So, one of the things, one of the like narrow corners of my, when I was getting ready for this talk, I noticed that you were on a release from the Flying Burrito Brothers that was recorded by Owsley that came out about 10 years ago from the April 69 Avalon shows.
That must have been with Mike Wilhelm.
Yeah, I think you were, apparently they played with, they co-billed or played with the Dead at the Avalon. And,
I remember,
credited playing organ on a couple tunes.
That's not impossible.
Did a lot of that kind of thing happen with the,
Oh, sure. In a way, we were one band. I remember times with the guys from the Airplane joined the Grateful Dead. And vice versa. There was a time at the Fillmore East, we backed up Janis Joplin.
Nice.
And I've sat in with Big Brother, Quicksilver, several shows with Country Joe. And that's a wonderful experience right there.
I bet. There's an interesting side note about that Avalon show with shows. I guess there were two shows with the Burrito Brothers, is that that was Jerry's first really close look at Sneaky Pete playing steel guitar, and it has been speculated that that's kind of the root of his steel guitar obsession that began that year.
Well, he was always looking to explore, and that sounds quite believable.
Yeah, the legend has it that he even played a long backstage on another steel guitar during one of the sets.
Could well be. I remember I toured with Papa John Creech, and he was always playing backstage with what was going on stage.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I can see that. I've attended a number of shows over the years where I felt like the only way I could begin to comprehend what I'm seeing is if I were to grab a guitar and try to wrestle it into the strings myself. Not that I have that kind of chops to do that sort of thing.
Well, it's also that's the difference between the late 60s revolution in rock music and the early 60s avant-garde, was that the rock music was more participatory. People thought, hey, I can do it, I'll grab a guitar and do it. Whereas when you're playing 12 stone, Freudian slip, 12 stone music, you're not thinking I could do that. You're thinking, wow, how did that happen?
And it's taking you on a very different kind of trip.
Well, there's some overlap. There's a John Cage variations piece, which was imitated later by the Beatles' Revolution Number 9 and Frank Zappa Help I'm a Cop. It's a direct John Cage take. They were doing what he did.
And you and Phil were kind of responsible for a bit of overlap yourselves, you brought the prepared piano onto the record.
Oh, yeah. It's what I brought with me when I came in the door, yeah.
That's awesome. And we're all eternally thankful for that.
It helped get rid of the producer.
Yeah. That was probably a very good change, although the label didn't like it much.
Yeah, well, we have a verb and a pronoun for them.
So just real quick, so it doesn't go unstated, the tour starts on August 1st in Philadelphia, and then at the Foundry at the Fillmore in Philadelphia, and then D.C. at the Hamilton on the 2nd, and then August 3rd at the 13th Annual Bears Picnic Family Reunion at Blaine Picnic Grounds in Blaine, PA, and then August 4th at the Starland in Sayreville, New Jersey, and August 5th, the Space at Westbury in Westbury, New York. That's a good quick shot here on the East Coast for you guys. So.
Well, I have to elaborate and clarify here.
Please.
I will only be in on the last show of that tour. I was pre-booked. August 1st is Grateful Dead night at the Chicago White Sox game, and I'm throwing up first pitch.
Oh, awesome. Well, pass that along to my Chicago
game. I've been working on my screwball. I figured it would be appropriate.
I think that would be more than appropriate. So you'll only be at the August 5th show in Westbury?
In Long Island, yes.
Okay.
And it's a snafu, which I frankly regret dearly. But I'm looking forward to further great ties with these guys, because so far we've done about, I think, close to 100 shows, and I think we're on to something.
Yeah, I was looking into it, and I saw that you guys were all over last year, including a DC show that I regretfully missed. And I will be at the Hamilton show myself this year, so we will miss
you. Well, say hello to the guys.
I will.
Say hello to the Grog and Tankard.
That is, sadly, I believe that is long gone.
I'm sure. That's a lamentable, but that's the way of the world.
Yeah, it is indeed. And then we'll have to catch you next time when you come back through D.C.
I get there often. I play, the mansion on O Street near DuPont Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And I play also at Gypsy Sally's from time to time, with the quartet the last time as well.
Excellent. And that is actually right down the street from where I'm sitting right now. So just
we unveiled a version of Along Comes Mary, where the audience claps along. And
very
I did
cool.
a segue from Teddy Bear's Picnic into They're Coming to Take Me Away. Huh? So we have fun.
Wonderful. That does sound fun. And any idea you'd, when the Dos Hermanos record will be
We're
coming
looking
out?
At with about 6 months.
Okay.
I mean,
well,
Bob
maybe...
Dylan is a genius in the studio. And he proved that stage with the Grateful Dead back in the day. And we're onto something, too.
Oh, well, maybe we can talk again when you guys are putting that out, and we can share it with the listeners.
That would be fine. But the A-team here is Live Dead 69, and I am stoked about them.
Yeah, I am, too. We're really looking forward to seeing them. So thank you for taking some time to talk with me.
You're so welcome. I hope I get to see you again. I'll probably remember you.
Well, I will say I at the time when I met you, I was impressed with your mustache and had been since I was, even younger.
We all change.
And now I have one of my own, so you won't recognize me.
We'll be in disguise.
Exactly. Well, thank you again, and you take care.
You're welcome, and every bit of it. Do well.
You too.
All right, so that was pretty rad. And again, the Live Dead and Riders 69 tour is out east August 1st in Philly, August 2nd in Washington, D.C., August 3rd in Blaine, Pennsylvania, August 4th, Sayreville, New Jersey, August 5th in Westbury, New York. All those dates, I'm going to have them up on the blog so you can find those things. And anyways, I want to thank Tom again for joining me. That was it was really a treat to talk with him, and would that I could have spoken longer. Maybe we can get him back here to talk about some more things like the Dos Hermanos project that he has in the pipeline and things like that. Speaking of the blog, you can find Broke Down Podcast on the interwebs at brokedownpodcast.blogspot.com, and we're on Twitters at Broke Down Pod, Instagram under the same at Broke Down Pod, and on Facebook, if you still Facebook, at Broke Down Podcast. We're on all those things. Please check us out and follow along. And there's cool stuff sometimes on the Twitters. That's probably where I'm most active. The blog posts, though, they have additional information for every episode, usually. And you can stream the episodes right there if that's maybe works for you during your business day or wherever you work, consider that. Of course, we have t-shirts and stickers and cups and all those things on our Redbubble site. That link is also on the blog. It's the easiest way to find it. I could tell it to you. But just go to the blog, and you'll see the t-shirt there on the right, and you can just mash your mouse thing into that, and get it'll take you right there. We got ladies' shirts and men's shirts, and we got the old-fashioned, beefy tee kind of shirts, and we have that new tri-blend that the kids like. We also have mugs and travel cups in case you like to put hot drinks into things. We've got things you could put hot drinks into. I really appreciate your support. Anything you kick into the cause will go back into the podcast, so I really appreciate you guys jumping on there and picking up a shirt. And you'll be the stylish one on the lot if you're walking around with one of these. Trust me. All right, so the next thing we have for you is I have an interview with a gentleman by the name of Will Soule. Will records really wonderful psychedelic music. He's a guitar player. He records under the name Prana Crafter. And we had a really lovely chat, and I'm going to get into that. And we not only talk about his music, we'll play a little bit of that, but we also talk about Grateful Dead. He picked out some cuts, and so we'll get into some good old Grateful Dead as we go along through. And I hope you enjoy this conversation. I hope you enjoy the music we picked. I'm sure you will. I'll be talking to you on the back end of this with a little bit of a goodbye. So check it out. This is myself talking with Will Soule, a.k.a. Prana Crafter. Will, I want to thank you for reaching out to me. I first heard your music through Jeff Conklin's show, the WFMU show, Avant Ghetto, a few weeks back. Probably heard it before, but I often listen while I'm working. And astute listeners of this show will remember that Jeff was on here recently. Anyways, he played a cut from your new record, and that really did it for me. And then lo and behold, I got a message from you. I think I followed you, and you were like, "Hey, man, I like Grateful Dead."
Yeah,
and
I saw what you were doing. As soon as I saw it, I said, "Oh, wait, what's going on? Okay, I got to reach out and say what's up."
Well, I'm glad you did. I'm totally digging this record and the other stuff. I've kind of dug back into your other stuff in your catalog that I could get my ears on. Nice. Some of it, you know, you got some tapes out there that might have to dig, man. Might have to dig for them. I'm into that though. As a record collector, it's kind of it's in my blood. but I want to tell everybody at the top that you've got a new album called Enter the Stream, and you are your name is Will Soule, but you record under the name Prana Crafter.
Yeah, that's correct.
And Enter the Stream comes out at the end of this month on July 31st. It's a physical release on Sunrise Ocean Bender Records, and digital is on Bandcamp. And everybody out there, you guys should check it out. I'll put links in the bio or in the I'll put links in the blog post that get everybody to this stuff. But Will, I've listened to a lot of things that I would kind of loosely call psychedelic folk, but I think that tag kind of omits that crackling energy in your sound. Mm-hmm. I hear it in this album and some of your other work. How would you, under duress, describe what you do?
Do you mean like a lot of times with that kind of psychedelic folk, it tends to be, at least, yeah, I do know what you mean. For me, that kind of genre of psychedelic folk, I've never really been able to completely associate what I do at all with it, because I know that it is folky and it is psychedelic, so I end up calling it that. But then when I hear other stuff that's in that genre, it tends to be a little different. I think what I call what I do just mystic psych, because kind of the energy to me is what's important, which is why I'm such a deadhead, because to me, like, the energy is so much more important than like any like motifs of like styles that are going on. You know, it's about that. So psychedelic to me is fine. Acid folk, psych folk, anything like that, as long as something psychedelic.
The best stuff, you know. A lot of great music just crosses a lot of lines, and I think you're doing that here. I get a sense of space, kind of both inner, outer, and also like breadth, openness in the sound. Kind of, you also reference nature in your writing. You're from the Pacific Northwest. It'd be accurate to say that your home up there is a strong influence.
Huge. Yeah, I live up Pacific Northwest and up in like Olympic Peninsula, which is just mainly like forested, protected land. And it's just, I spend a lot of time out mountain biking and out hiking and stuff. And so it's a huge influence. And especially for what you're saying, like that kind of vast kind of, I try to get like a vastness to the sound, like a real open kind of landscapiness to the sound. And I think it comes from that, because I grew up here by this thing, Mount St. Helens, where I grew up.
Right.
And it had erupted right before I was born. So like my whole life, there was this thing where like this huge mountain had erupted right before you were born, and it turned the sky black. And it was just this ominous thing. So I think growing up here, with there's the volcanic mountains and the huge trees and the ocean, it's a humbling like landscape to live in, because you know that you're like absolute toast, you know, at any moment. If, you know, if nature, if Mount Rainier decided to blow up, you're kind of told your whole life, yeah, you're probably dead.
Yeah, well, you won't have to worry about it. It either doesn't blow up and you're fine.
Exactly. Or it does and there's nothing you can do. So right. I think that it's in that way. I've always had that kind of, you know, that kind of feeling kind of underneath things, that kind of ominous something's going on all the time.
Awesome. I also noticed in looking at the notes and things for the records and tapes that you will, is this just a one-man project?
Yeah, pretty much. Once in a while I'll have someone do percussion, because I'm not a great percussionist in the classic sense. So I've had a once in a while, if I'm doing like a folk rocky type song that lends itself, I'll have someone. I'll play like hand drums on a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like tribal kind of hand drums in the middle of something. But once in a while I'll have someone, just like a local person, put some drums on. I had a guy this time do it long distance, just put drums on a few, you hear on Enter the Stream, a few places, kind of really select. Because it's not like a big part of the sound, I don't initially want it going through everything. But, and then I had one guy put some guitar on this album on the track called Michael Hurry's Little Brainstorm. He did guitar. You might not be able to tell. A lot of people, we have a very similar style. People will be surprised if they don't know, but it's the third track, instrumental track. It's the instrumental track number 3. And if you listen, you'll hear a guy named Taro Plain. He's got albums out. Real good kind of space rock stuff.
Cool. Well, you'll have to point me to his stuff, but I will go back and listen to that track. I do remember enjoying it. So we'll have to go back and check that out. So tell me about the name Prana Craft. From where does that come?
So it's kind of a funny, story. Where it comes from is I was at one point in time, like many years ago, like just messing around, like writing like little beginnings of stories. And I've never like had the wherewithal to follow through with like writing a good story. But, you know, I like science fiction, and I like fantasy kind of genre things. And I was trying to write this like story, and in it there were like these wizardy type of thing, people that lived in this forest. So you cross from this town through this forest, you know, to this mountain, to this other realm or whatever. And in this forest, there were the Prana Crafters, were like these nature wizards that were living in this like thing. So I wrote that at one point. And then when I was putting some music on SoundCloud just for the hell of it, and a guy got a hold of me from the UK and asked if he could release like a CD of stuff. So I had to have like a name at that point in time to do something. And so that name drew me, because I thought it was a good name, plus it described kind of what I feel like I do, because it's a lot of what I do is improv. It's just improv things that come out of the moment, and then I work a lot to kind of blend them all together and make it, you know. So I feel myself to be like a crafter together of like this spontaneous, just, you know, whatever comes out. I always feel at the mercy of whatever is going to come out. I'm not someone who can just say, I'm going to blow you away and play this little riff right now at you. Wow. I mean, maybe it will work, maybe it won't, but it usually works.
Walking out without a net is a thing that deadheads can relate to, so we all get that.
Absolutely, and that's what, to me, so that's where the name came from. I'm sure you've heard that quote. One of the Jerry quotes was talking about improvisational music being like strapped to the back of, you know, the horse in the middle of the stampede, just being thrown on the back of it. Go,
right?
You know, just go. Don't fall off.
Or do sometimes.
Or do fall off.
You might land somewhere interesting.
Bounce back on.
So you mentioned reading fantasy. Does that mean when I heard the reference to the Shire in Old North Wind, that was
definitely intentional? Yeah, I have one of my daughter she's 14 now. I was into Lord of the Rings and stuff growing up, but she like really got into it. She was into Harry Potter, and I'm like kept trying to introduce her to it. And eventually she's like got into it and got really deep into it. And she's one of the people that like, if you pronounce something wrong or you get a tiny historical detail wrong, and she's like, no, he wasn't born until this 500 years after this happened. And you just, I'm like,
oh, that's
okay.
Awesome.
So I gave that one a little ode to her. I've thrown that in there for her.
Read the Lord of the Rings to two of my kids, including my 14-year-old daughter.
Awesome.
My 10-year-old
awesome.
Son. So something I'm trying to pass on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it has the same, to me at least, I mean, not for everybody, but for me, the same feeling energy-wise I get out of something like that when you really get into it is the same energy that I am drawn to of being like deeply into like a, you know, a Dark Star or a playing jam or something that just, I mean, I get the same kind of feeling of being in that kind of imaginal space, you know,
creating universes, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I mentioned it a minute ago. I'd really like to play Old North Wind for everybody. I think that track really gets nicely at the gist of what's happening on this record.
Cool.
And I really love it. So everybody, here we go. This is Prana Crafter, Old North Wind. I think that really gives everybody a good taste of what the record is, and I'll say it again now, and we'll say it again later. The new record is Enter the Stream from Prana Crafter, and you can get that from Sunrise Ocean Bender Records if you like physical stuff. I know I do. I ordered the LP, and
awesome. Thank you.
You can also get it on Bandcamp if you're a digital music person, and I will have all those links out there, but pranacrafter.bandcamp.com will get you started.
Yeah, I'll get you there. And I'm guessing people could tell from that one, you can tell I probably love Neil Young. I think it's probably obvious with that kind of,
yeah, it's in there,
tempo and kind of with that song that, yeah, I'm love Neil Young.
But your guitar tone sounds a little bit like somebody else on there.
Nice.
So let's talk about Grateful Dead.
Nice. Yeah. That's my number one. I mean, that's why as soon as I saw you, we were connected a little bit on social media. I was like, okay, a lot of people like the Grateful Dead, or people especially more and more so like the Grateful Dead. But when you like come across the head, you gotta connect up. You know, once in a while, I had this bakery down the street from me, and I was many years ago in there and see the baker, and we would just, you know, say hello, but wouldn't really talk. And then one day I'd go in there wearing a Steely shirt, and all of a sudden Baker Bill comes out from the back room, and he's like, you know, comes over really close to me, starts talking to me, and I think was feeling out, and we start talking about it. And yeah, lo and behold, he was a head, you know. And from then on, every time I saw him, every time go in there, he comes running out of the back room, you know, wanting to talk about something. You know?
Yeah, it's a very big club, but sometimes it's just great to find somebody who's, you know, part of the family.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're, you know, living out in a rural area.
Exactly.
Where, you know, there may be further.
Few and far between. Once it's like maybe I've seen two people in my like 13 years out here that I could like figure out. I mean, there are other people, but that I could figure out were, you know, deadheads way out here.
Yeah, there are quite a lot of us who are a little more low key.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
How and when did you get hip to the Grateful Dead?
So when I was a kid, my dad was a bluegrass musician.
Cool.
And he was in Washington. He was in like a performing like Northwest touring bluegrass band when I was a kid. And they put out a record, and on that record, one of the tracks was Friend of the Devil. They did a bluegrass cover of it.
Okay, I'm going to need to know their band
like,
name now.
Yeah, it's called Silver Mountain Railroad.
Okay.
Yeah, if you look on Discogs, you'll find them on Discogs. You won't find them like Googling the charts, but if you go to Discogs, you'll see someone has put their album was called Snake River Special, I think it was called. Yeah, the picture that on the front you'll see, my dad drew it. It was like a hand-drawn picture of them. You know, they're a bluegrass band, so he's got his cowboy hat, and there's a train going through the mountains type of deal.
Awesome.
Yeah, so one of the tracks on there, they did Friend of the Devil, very much Olden in the Way style, Friend of the Devil. So my whole life growing up, it was like, well, that's dad. You know, the band broke up when I was really young. They had, like, tragic kind of circumstances. So that ended when I was, like, 5 years old or something. But my whole life, there was always, like, my dad was teaching me to play guitar, you know, and then there was always this record of his, and that was one of those songs. And when he taught me to play guitar, that was one of the early songs was learning to do that. And so he'd play the mandolin too. So we could kind of, do that. Interesting to me, he never introduced me to, Garcia and Grisman. I don't think he knew about it.
Yeah,
he knew Olden in the Way. He wasn't a big deadhead, but he loved Olden in the Way, loved, New Riders. Yeah. I don't think he knew. He kind of stopped listening to music that I liked. I think in the 80s got really just started listening to like contemporary country and, you know, living out in the rural out here listening to country music mainly. But so I don't think when those albums started coming out, the duo ones, I don't think he knew about.
He was tuned out at the time. Well, that's too bad.
He passed away, but if he wouldn't have passed away a long time ago, I would have loved to. He would have freaked out, I think, over like the pizza tapes or something. He would have freaked out over that.
Yeah, those are pretty much hardcore stuff.
Yeah.
You get a Garcia Grisman and then throw in a flat picker like Tony Rice, and you've got some amazing recipe.
Yeah. It's amazing, yeah. So, yeah, I didn't get dead hipped at that point, but then it was always kind of this thing. So then when I was a teenager, met a friend who was like at my sister's age, and kind of at that point in time where I had started getting into psychedelic things and started hanging out with him. And he had this little, we called it the shed, but it was, I guess it was just like, you know, a tool shed that was just hooked to the house. It was like where there was a hose hook up inside and you'd hang all your tools inside or whatever. But it was just a little, probably like 10 foot by like 4 foot little shed or whatever. And it would have, you know, like had the cushions and the tape player and the CD player. And this was like the 90s. So we didn't really have a record player in there, but yeah. So he had a neighbor who was, had tons of tapes and was following him around and doing all that. And so this guy would come back from Bellingham where this guy lived. He'd come back and he'd tell my friend Max and, oh, look at this new one. I got this new tape for you guys. And then Max would come two houses down from this guy's house back to the shed every couple months with all this new stuff. And then Max would buy he would be buying all the Dick's Picks as soon as they came out. And between those things, we would just sit in there for, you know, every night for, you know, summers and years on end, just every single night, just sitting out there. Mainly, we'd listen to some other stuff, but like 80% of it was just listening to Dead. Constantly.
Oh, awesome. That's that's a good way to learn.
Yeah, exactly. And a good way to get hooked for life that way, you know?
So I know that you were just a little too young to see the dead. Have you seen any of the post-Garcia groups?
I've seen Phil and Friends is the only one I've ever seen, but that was awesome. I saw them at the Gorge, which was a wonderful place to see them at.
Right.
Missed the dead by a tiny bit. I got a shirt from a show that my sister's boyfriend in high school, he wasn't a deadhead at all, but it was the thing I think to do. And he was like a rich guy and had money. So I think the cool thing was to try to take my stepdad to the dead show, which my stepdad wasn't into the dead, was horrified by all the pot smoke at the show. But they brought me the shirt back. So I had that for a lot of, you know, kept that my whole life. But yeah, I saw Phil and Friends, which was awesome. Loved it. Just never really kind of got partially where I live. There's not a lot of, the Gorge is about the only place that you're going to see a big band come touring through doing a festival type of thing. So, right. Which is a long way. That's like 5 or 6 hours from me. And I'm 3 hours almost from Seattle, 3 or 4 hours from Portland. Yeah. Have kids. So just, yeah, I would have, you know, loved to on one level, but for me personally, it just was not in the cards.
Yeah. Well, timing is everything, right? So yeah,
absolutely.
So, you mentioned to me that although your music doesn't sound like Grateful Dead, Garcia is an influence on your playing. Could you elaborate on how he or they collectively have influenced your work?
Oh, absolutely. So he's my number one as far as, you know, any guitar player. I love guitar players. I love guitar music. But for me, Jerry's a clear head above the rest on, you know, and I think maybe it's because I listen to all of his stuff. You know, I love all of his solo projects. I love it all. So when you hear Jerry in that range, it's hard. So when people write him off, you know, it just infuriates me because someone will write him off and go, oh, I hate those little flute sounds, you know, he plays on his. And it's like, you're talking about, you know, a handful of shows of one tiny period of a person who spent their entire, all their waking hours making, you know, music with their guitar.
And like one song a night during that period, you know, because he was
exactly.
doing other, you know,
exactly.
like, okay, play the flute on Road Jimmy. And it was gorgeous. But,
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. So, I listen to him just constantly. I mean, everything, every day between everything I listen to, there's always going to be something of Jerry. I love Garcia and Wales. I love that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The Side Trips and the Boudreaux. I listen to that all the time. I mean, I just love it. So in that way, he's just always on my mind, like in that way. And he's just the epitome to me of like flow playing, of being able to, like you're talking about, go out without a net. And just to me, it's like if the longer you can go and make it work, the more in awe I am. And I know that Jerry, if like left alone, could probably have just eternally never ended. Like I have a belief that if it was possible and he just started, he could probably, if he was awake for 100 years, have flowed through for 100 years straight.
He was a motivated player. So even when Grateful Dead was more of a job and an obligation, he was still going out and playing with Jerry Band or Grisman or what have you in the 90s. He was constantly driven to play. When he was younger, you know, he would play whenever they were home. He was out doing something.
Absolutely. So. And I think that's the difference. And I think that's similar to, you know, I think Hendrix, although he died so young, we'll never see how amazing he would have ended up being. But to me, his energy is so unique. And I think it's similar. I've heard that about him, that Hendrix always had a guitar with him. Like he was always going to be playing guitar, you know, even if whatever else was going on, he's going to be having a guitar behind him and he's going to be noodling on that thing for a while. You know,
right.
You know, so I think
it might be behind his head.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's part of, like, there's certain people, and I think you're right, Jerry just, and that's why, you know, I think that he's, to me, he just seems different. But just that energy too, that, you know, the band could tap into, to me, like, that's really important. And if I could ever get anywhere near tapping into the kind of, you know, just trancey flow, just mystic energy they got into, then I'm always chasing that, you know, always as a sound.
That's an admirable vocation, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I guess the only thing to try for.
Right. So I asked you before, you know, as we were scheduling this and whatever, if there was anything in particular you'd like to play for the listeners. And you came back with several things, great things.
Yeah.
So I thought we could kind of dip in chronologically through these three shows that we want to look at.
Okay.
Which means, of course, we start with a show that was one of my favorite, like favorite earliest tapes. And I've worn out copies of the
so
show.
Cool. Yeah.
And had to replace it. And
that's so cool.
And this is October 12th, 1968 from the Avalon Ballroom, San Francisco, California. Tell me why you selected it.
Amazing. Well, first off, once I sent that to you, I thought it was the greatest sign ever that you came back saying, like, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, wait a minute. He's coming back saying this is one of his all-time shows. It's one of my all-time shows. I'm like, that's a good sign. So then the funny thing is I was like, I'm going to look up some kind of notes about, like, things I might have, you know, trivia, if there's anything cool I don't know about it. Came across this article, and I'm looking at it, and I realized it was written like 10 years ago, and it's written by a guy who I know through, you know, social media because of being a radio DJ and this guy, Cosmic Chambo on Twitter. Yeah, Daniel Chamberlain. So I thought it was crazy. I'm like, that's good coincidences. I just talked to him a couple days before because he was doing a radio show and he played some of my music with Alan Watts, and I'm a huge Alan Watts fan. So I was like,
oh, wow.
I commented back on his thing going, oh, thanks for playing me with Alan. Like, he's my favorite. And then a couple days later, I see that he's written this article 10 years ago on one of my favorite shows, which is one of your favorite shows. So I thought that was pretty cool. But so the reason it's one of my favorites is for what we're kind of talking about is that like energy, that like just mystic, just amazing energy in that time. Like for me, that's some of the epitome of that was happening. And like Jerry's playing at that point, you can tell that like it's not master, you know, of the guitar Jerry at all yet. It's like having the time of his life, like playing the guitar.
Yeah, he's digging into that guitar and just stuff is just flowing out.
And loving it. And
This is right around the moment when they were doing the Mickey and the Heartbeat shows, which is basically where Pig and Bobby were soft fired. They were fired, but it didn't take. And they kept showing up. but those shows feature a lot of really extended jams. And this one has them in the band, and they congeals. And
yeah, true.
Things are just...
It all works somehow on this one with everybody or with everyone who's there.
This is right before Tom Constanton joined the band. Everybody who was tuned in to the interview mm-hmm. earlier. And we're just going to play one song, which is like the biggest understatement. But I'll just give everybody a picture of the set list, what's on the show. Dark Star, St. Stephen, The 11, Death Don't Have No Mercy. Then Cryptical, other one, Cryptical, New Potato Caboose, Jam, Drums, Jam, Feedback.
For that era, yeah. For what's going on with that energy, you couldn't ask for like anything else, really.
Right.
Well, I don't know if it's true, but one of the things I saw on that little article I looked up is that supposedly this is a show that there's rumors that Jimi Hendrix was there. And if people asked, did they ever know each other? This was like the rumored in this article. It was talking about that too, that's kind of been the, so I was curious if you've ever heard that or if what you've heard of that.
Without digging in, I don't know if this is the night, but there was one night where Hendrix was in town and he came over to play with the Grateful Dead and he stood on the side of the stage with his guitar and they never waved him up.
This is what they're talking. Some people are claiming this was the one. Potentially.
It might be. And if you listen to this whole show, you can think, A, what might have been.
Yeah.
But B, you don't miss him. I mean,
no,
I'm sorry.
No, and for him, you know, he had that thing where everybody gets to go and like see him do this thing. So it was probably a good opportunity, if it's true, for him to sit back and see what was still going on with guitar playing, you know, here, because he was just coming back over. So I think it would have been a good way for him to be like, oh, okay. You know, there's other people know what they're doing too.
Yeah, and boy, did they.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think what I'd like to do now is play everybody the Dark Star. Mm-hmm. And you quite rightly suggested that we play more of the show. So after we do all of this and talk some more and play some of the other stuff, I think we'll go out with the end of this show.
Be cool.
Just because that jam is so crucial.
Sweet. Yeah.
But for now, a beautiful Dark Star.
What do you want me to do? Say everybody has to dance or else? Thanks, everybody. Everything's gonna be all right. We're gonna play here until we drop.
Okay, we're gonna do a elementary dance number now. It's a foxtrot, and it's also a lady's choice. And,
Dark stock crashes, pouring its light into ashes. Reason tatters, the forces dance from the axis. Searchlight casting for false in the clouds of delusion. Shall we go, you and I, while we can, through the transitive night full of diamonds? as reflections of my dirt. Glass and dissolving in ice, middle flowers revolving. Lady in velvet, recedes in the nights of goodbye. Shall we go, you and I, while we can, through the transitive nightfall of diamonds?
So good.
Yeah, really
so
is.
Good.
This is what, like, looking for in a dark star.
Yeah, I mean, this is just a true classic. Yep. I'm honestly surprised they haven't released this.
It's weird.
It was an FM broadcast at some point. I'm not sure if it was live or shortly thereafter or years later. I don't. Dead Bass listed as such. So, so we know it's true.
Yeah.
but I think that's also who we can thank for the great quality tapes that have long circulated. I mean, I got my first copy of this probably in 1990 or 91.
That's awesome.
And, you know, and I burned it out by the mid 90s and had to get another.
yeah. It's so too, for me, like, one of the things about these shows at this time is some people who don't listen to the Dead in this era, and they only hear them later. They hear them when they're like the caricature of the Grateful Dead. They really don't get how heavy, like, their sound could be, and how, like, a lot of the, like, in this, on the jams going on here, like, you wouldn't think of them, people later, as, like, if you heard that and you didn't know about the Grateful Dead, all their eras, someone played you some of this stuff, I don't think someone who knows, you know, 80s, 90s era Dead would figure out that's who they were listening to. I mean, it's,
I could take a slice out of the jam before feedback on the end of this show and play it for somebody and they would not know it.
And
what
feedback
band this is.
And if you went into, I think I had a note when I was trying to think about the show and I was like, that jam into feedback was to me very progressive kind of musically. Like, that was not what was going on bluesy stuff at that time.
Some of those feedback jams are, you know, more Sonic Youth than hippie music.
Yeah, and people don't give them credit. A lot of people, I don't think. But that's one of these things, this article I read that Daniel had written. It was a really short thing, but he was trying to point out that, like, he had heard, like, some guys from the Black Flag were really into the Dead. He's like, oh, it makes sense. Now that I've, you know, get into this sound, I get it.
I think it was Greg Ginn.
Must have been.
He was a bit deadhead, apparently.
Yeah, so I think that's what's really cool. And the guitar sound for Jerry, too. I love all era Jerry guitar sounds, but when he was playing on the more standard guitars, on the you know, the Gibsons, going through the Fender, just turning it up till it's just to that point of, I know he couldn't keep going with that because of their situation, but that sound to me, what I go for guitar sound, that's like the golden for me. I play a Gibson Les Paul through a Fender. I don't have a twin, but I play it through a reverb. And I really tried to go for, that's what I'm always aiming for. The sound of his guitar on this album is pretty much, to me, the holy grail of, with what I have, what I try to anytime go for with a guitar.
It's like a fat tenor, alto horn, you know, it's just
cuts. It's cuts so hard. So, yeah, that's really what it's the guitar I've had. I got it a long time ago, and it's what I had. So when I was looking for an amp, I was like, oh, I can actually try to get that little bit of that early sound now. Yeah,
that's terrific.
Yeah,
so let's go ahead and jump forward exactly 14 months to a show that was officially released as Dave's Picks 10, but we're going to play a little bit of it. Now, Tom Constantin is in the band here, so awesome. Folks can listen to his organ playing on these
Sweet.
Tunes.
Yeah, good stuff.
This is 12-12-69 mm-hmm. Thelma Theater in Los Angeles, California. It's a great show. There's a lot of great Pigpen in this show. Mm-hmm. Speaking of, you know, different shades of Grateful Dead and different sounds, but you rightly pointed out the Cumberland
Love
Blues.
Love it. So good. Such a good one. It's one
and,
of the best.
You want to talk to us about why you selected this show before we dive in?
So one of the things, just my, you know, it's in my favorite kind of era. I'm one of the, I mean, I, like I said, I love stuff from everywhere, but if I really am honest and what I, in my day to day want to listen to, it's like 68 to, you know, like to early 70s. It's what I just, I like it all, but that's what I want to listen to. So I, a lot of times what I'll do is, at one point in time is I'd go for my birthday, see how many shows were on my birthday. So that's what these 12-12 shows, I ended up finding two of my absolute favorite shows by doing that. And it was just, you know, luck, but it then also narrows you into looking into what run was this on? If I'd like to, you know, so it's just a way to random way to grab something. But I ended up finding a couple like really gems doing that.
Nice.
Yeah. And this Cumberland,
nice. Yeah, this is,
love it. Love the Cumberland on this one. It's, like, well, I love that track. I always will check that out if it's on a show, and this one just kills it.
It's a good barometer of their how they're playing, how they're feeling.
True, on their onness.
Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and play? We're gonna play three songs from this. We're gonna start with Cumberland, go into Black Peter, and then a little Pigpen with Next Time You See Me.
Nice. Thank you.
gentleman makes a $5 bill. Keep him happy all the time. Some of the fellas making nothing at all, and you can hear him crying.
Can I go, buddy? Can I go down? Make your ship pass the mine.
Run and see. chance is not gold. That is a true, true sin. All the chance is not gold. And like the good wolf tells, you got to reap just what you sow.
So those were great. Thank you for highlighting this show. I mean, as I said, it's got great Pigpen throughout it also, including there's an Easy Wind, a King Bee. First set ends with a 30-minute Love Light.
Yeah.
And then there's this killer Alligator Caution sequence to wrap up the night.
Yeah. And that was getting pretty late. I mean, for him, that was getting to the point when we're going to lose any great pig pen pretty soon.
Yeah. There wasn't much longer before he had to take some time off the road.
And, yeah. And that was, you know, that's like one of those things with the Dead too, that you get to enjoy like completely different bands if you get really into different. I mean, if you're really into just the pig pen stuff, somebody was, they would enjoy almost a different band than someone who's like exclusively into like 90s stuff. And so you get to have all that. You get to experience all those amazing people.
I find it interesting. I've read firsthand accounts of the Grateful Dead in the 60s, and they referred to the band as basically being a different band depending on who was singing. So Pigpen would move to the front, and then you've got this R&B band, mm-hmm. and he was the main guy. He was driving, and then you'd get, you know, change over to something else, and Jerry would sing, or, you know, it was Dark Star and the guitar and the bass are driving it. Then Bobby would move out front with something, and, you know, suddenly it's Bobby's band.
That's so true. It is so true.
You know, they had this wide distribution of charisma.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, of course, if folks want to hear the really, really great cleaned up version of this show, you should get Dave's Picks 10.
Yeah.
I'm morally obligated to recommend this to everyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just think it's really great.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's I think I told you in an email we're having, the last tape I did before this album is coming out was called Bodhicitta's Choice, and the name was a very obvious homage to that album Bear's Choice, which was heavily a celebration of Pigpen, I think, and of this kind of this a certain like kind of raw Grateful Dead sound. That was one of my favorite albums for a long time. And I think only people who probably really love Pig would love that album, I'm guessing, because it's a Pig celebration.
It's got some good representation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Katie May alone.
That's what I'm thinking of. I'm like, that. Like that's like the only time almost that you – one of the only times you get just Pig, you know, doing something under the Grateful Dead kind of banner.
You can dig into some of the stuff and the early 70s, the evening with Grateful Dead stuff, and he did some acoustic stuff where he
cool.
shined. But that's where that's from, really.
Yeah.
So
gotcha. I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So our next track or our next selection is from late 73. It's 12/12/73.
Yeah, this one, another one. I think you look at the set list and you just go, what else would you possibly ask for in 1973 from the Grateful Dead?
Right. Well, that's kind of the beauty of this entire tour. So 12/19, 7 days, 2 shows later, was released as Dick's Picks 1. And it's classic. It's just true classic. And all of these shows from this time frame are pretty much equally strong.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got every damn thing, as you said.
And good and good at, and like everything is good. Like there's not like oh God, I don't want to hear what's going to happen on Let It Grow. To oh no, thank you. It's like everything.
Yeah,
is,
no.
It's what you want to hear.
They're really on top of the game here, and you know, it's a lot of this stuff. You know, the stuff that they debuted 10 months earlier at Roscoe Maples on February 9th. At this point, it's just it's peak.
True.
Or very near.
Yeah, it's tight. So incredibly tight. Like. That's what one of the I'm a real Tennessee Jed. Like I just love that's one of the songs. Like I just love that song. It'll get me like in a happy mood at any time. And this is like one of those versions where it's like so incredibly laid back the groove. But if you listen to it, it couldn't be any more tight than it is. But it's like almost right. I'm sure that's the kind of the play too of that, you know, Tennessee Jed is that he's kind of this slack jawed, kind of really laid back, kind of goofy thing. But it's not, you know, it's actually completely just tight, just amazing jam.
That's an art right there, is to mm-hmm. sound loose and be tight.
It's crazy to me that Tennessee Jet, it's so loose and so tight, like it's crazy. It's that trance kind of, I mean, you know, it's just kind of the music kind of organism going when something like that happens.
Well, I took a look at this. You just gave me the show and I took a look at this and I said, well, I know what we need to play out of here, and for my money, not that any of the rest of the show isn't worth listening to, and you should all go listen to this entire show. But right now, we're going to play you the Eyes of the World in the Morning Dew.
Yeah.
Thank you. walk me out in the morning to my home. Walk me out in the morning dew today. I can't walk you in the morning dew. Can't walk you out in the morning. Do today.
Thank you.
me out in the morning. Do my honey. Walk me out in the morning. Do today. In the morning, do my honey. I guess it doesn't matter anyway. I guess it doesn't matter anyway. I guess it doesn't matter anyway. Thank you.
I listened to this today.
Me too.
Again.
Me too.
And my God, the eyes is outstanding. You know, they hit all the changes and it gets so good. And it's not like, you know, RFK long, mm-hmm. but it's really perfect. Good. And then the morning too.
Mm-hmm.
Ah,
yep.
Just the, if you look at the wave map, you know, mm-hmm. you put it in your computer and you just look at the dynamics on this morning dew, you know you're in for it.
Yeah.
It just, Jerry brings it so far down.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, those, you're absolutely so right. Great. When you those two, I'm like, oh yeah. Because that is one of those eyes where I listened to it today too, and it's one of those ones where I could just repeat. You could put that on repeat, and I pretty much could just have that going in the background of my entire life, and I would just be, I have like this one playlist of like four or five eyes off that, you know, that site, Save Your Face. Have you ever checked out that? I think it's called Save Your Face. Check it out. So I think it's called Save Your Face. It's like a blog page or whatever, but they do these little selections, and they have selections from eyes from 73, and it's like four of them, and I have it on a playlist, and it'll play them all, and then it'll go back through them, and sometimes I'll realize I've been listening to these four eyes for like many hours in a row, and I'm like, wait, where am I? How many? Oh, I'm on the fourth time through, like the third one, and like this is like an example. It's just like perfect, and then like you said, the morning dew is ideal.
Yeah, that looping eyes thing brings to mind the fact that I could keep, and I have in the past, kept tapes of RFK 73 in my tape deck and just kept playing
all day long
and over for weeks.
Totally.
Every time I get in the car, it's somewhere in the middle of tape two of RFK 73 or whatever. It's just,
that's so true.
Weeks.
Yep. And this one, that eyes to it, like for me, just loving guitar and Jerry and kind of all the stuff with him and guitar. It's one of those things, you hear that and I go, as much as I love Jerry, like I was saying, playing a Gibson through a you know, you hear that and you go, but he couldn't have done, you can't do exactly that on that. He needed to, you know, you listen to his justification for why to do that. I mean, he needed to become, you know, Jerry wielding the other guitar, other special guitars, you know?
Yeah, he had to move.
Had to.
Move on up. Yeah. I think I'm not sure he had Wolf yet. Maybe
at this point. I think in 73, I think he should have by then because.
Yeah, I know 72, it was the Strat with the Gator on it. So I guess he probably was on Wolf.
I think that by 72, you would have been hitting with the Strat a lot. I'm pretty almost positive that in 73 would have been well before. Yeah, would have been before Travis Beans. I think that for sure.
Yeah,
and that's
Travis
and that's
Beans
I think we're
came out during the hiatus.
I think that's what we're hearing kind of right there is like that's. That kind of that jazzy sound that he would get with it. Yeah.
Well, it's awesome. It's freaking awesome. And I could listen to it all day long. And I have. And I probably will again. So, Will, I want to thank you for coming on the podcast. I've had a fun time putting all this together. I've had a great time digging into your music and learning more about what you do. And I've had a really fun time talking with you.
Me too. Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And really happy that you enjoyed what I'm doing because, you know, I love the Dead, but just because someone loves the Dead, they certainly doesn't mean they'll like what I'm doing. But I think that some people will hear that I'm trying to kind of tap into some of that energy on the, you know, on the jams.
Well, I think some people will agree. And if you like what you heard or just want to hear more, remind you again, the new album from Prana Crafter is called Enter the Stream. You can look up Sunrise Ocean Bender Records and pick up a physical copy, or you can go to Bandcamp. That's pranacrafter.bandcamp.com, and you can get a digital version of it. I'll have links to this and some of the other releases on the blog.
Awesome. Thank you.
And yeah, you guys should all go check it out. I'm pretty excited. The record comes out on July 31st.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you again. Thank you so much for coming on.
Totally.
All right. So that was Will. What a great guy. Real fan. Great guitar player and lovely, lovely fellow. Again, his new record is Enter the Stream. And it is out on July 31st on Sunrise Ocean Bender Records. It's available on Bandcamp, love Bandcamp, pranacrafter.bandcamp.com. You can also get the physical release if you're into compact discs or LPs like myself from Sunrise Ocean Bender. You can go over to the blog and get the whole link. Otherwise, you just Google Sunrise Ocean Bender Records, and they will sell you one of those things. Again, it's out July 31st. It's called Enter the Stream. The band is Prana Crafter. I've heard the album. It's really groovy. So what we are going to do now is I'm going to let you guys go, but not all by yourselves. I'm going to play a little bit more music. We're going to reach back to the 10-12-68 that we talked about earlier. We're going to play that jam that wraps up the show, Jam Into Feedback. This stuff is just so good. It's so good. Guys, they're just really getting at it. So I think you will, if you don't know this show, you should know this show. But whether you know it or not, you're going to love this. So we're going to play that, and then I will catch up with you guys in the next episode. In the meantime, you can find me on the internet at brokedownpodcast.blogspot.com, on the Twitters at brokedownpod, Instagram, same place, brokedownpod, and on Facebook at brokedownpodcast. Please, if you do listen on your phone or one of those podcasting apps, please consider giving me a rating, hopefully a nice one. Punch in all the stars, maybe leave a review so people know what they're getting into. It will really make me feel good, but more importantly, will help other people find the show. And that's what we want to do. We want to grow this thing and expand our community. Also, one good reason to keep an eye on those social media channels is I did this in the last episode. I didn't do it for this one, but I may do it again soon. Is I'm going to start soliciting requests. So you may see a post asking for a little suggestions. So if you got something in mind, keep an eye out for that post and jump on it and try to get a word in. I will play interesting suggestions from you at some point in the next few episodes. Okay, that's it. I'm going to go. Here is the Jam Into Feedback from Avalon Ballroom 10-12-68. Enjoy.
Osiris.